Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Well, hello there and welcome to another episode of In Conversation With, the podcast from the Devon Chamber of Commerce. My name is Paul Philpott. I'm Vice Chair of the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce. I'm also on the board of the Devon Chamber of Commerce and I'm your host here today. Now, we continue our interviews with some of our Devon-based MPs in this part of the podcast series. Now, we've already spoken to Luke Pollard and Caroline Vodan, and now we have a gentleman who is, well, at the time of recording, he's about to dash off on holiday, so he's very kindly taken some time out of his diary to join us via the wonders of Zoom stroke video call. Please welcome Steve Darling, MP. Hello, Steve.
Pleasure to be with you this morning.
I guess the most important and pertinent question is actually, where are you off to on holiday?
We're off to Penzance for a couple of days because I really enjoy their sea pool that they've got down there, Jubilee Pool. And then we're off to the Sillies with my wife, our two guide dogs, our two lads and their two girlfriends. We've been to the Sillies for a number of years throughout our two sons growing up. And now they've got girlfriends they're looking forward to bringing with us and helping them discover the joys of the Isles of Scilly.
How remarkable. So a nice, good old-fashioned family holiday. Love to hear it. Now, Steve, you've been involved in politics for over 30 years, from councillor and council leader. Now you're an MP. So how did it all start? What inspired you to get into the realm of public service?
I think I would blame Margaret Thatcher. It's all her fault.
Well, we all do, really, don't we?
As most things are of people of a certain age. So I would say that my mom was an ecologist, an environmentalist, used to fight for the ecology party as they were in the 70s. And I think probably when I do a talk at a school, I talk about 1984 and the miners' strike. And saying, well, actually, where do you get the balance right between the economy and community? And as the miners' strike went on, you were thinking, actually, if the government got it right around communities, that it felt as if they were wrecking elsewhere in the country to Torbay, because clearly we don't have that many mines in Torbay. But for me, I think that set my political compass. And as a Liberal Democrat, Liberal Democrats are renowned for putting community at the heart of what we do whilst being alive to the economy and seeing that the economy helps deliver good things for us. But equally, you've got to make sure you're taking the community with you on that journey as well. It's so important.
So what particular aspects kind of attracted you to the world of politics? Was it debate? Was it wanting to make a difference? Or, I don't know, do you fancy yourself as a little bit of a troublemaker, but in a good way?
I would say you hear of some politicians who may have spent from the age of 12 looking in the mirror and reading their maiden speech. I am not one of those. Take a couple of steps back. I think I'd always been interested in current affairs. And so when I was about 14, 15, 16, I was thinking, oh, maybe I want to be a journalist because people like Jeremy Bowen, Leeds Chaussette, these are all amazing people who help us understand complex matters and interpret the world to us. And they are brilliant people. And then you think, well, actually, I'm not that clever. I couldn't possibly do that. So maybe for me, it's actually trying to influence things and make a difference rather than reporting on stuff. How can I get involved? And so the best way of doing that is politics. So getting elected as a councillor, I stood when I was 21, because at that stage you had to be 21 to be able to stand, and now it's 18, and I fell short. But for me, it's what gets me up is, I must admit, it's the blue corner that I got a little wristband that I, imaginary wristband that said, what would not name of Conservative leader want me to do? And I think that's what I need to be doing, because I do see that I'm a little bit tribal, I'm afraid to say, as a Liberal Democrat, which is not very fashionable to say. But for me, it's championing the community and putting people first and grassroots people.
I think it's fair to say it takes all sorts. And I think in order to have, when I say a colourful political landscape, I don't necessarily mean colour in terms of political parties, you know, representative colours. I mean different styles, different techniques, different aims and personalities. And we're quite lucky down here in the Southwest. We've got a good bunch looking after us, really, on the whole.
I hope so. And I think that when you look at the makeup of the House of Commons, it has changed significantly. The fact that more than half the people in the Commons now are new people, so it's not that surprising when you see people walking into broom cupboards and things like that in the first few weeks, which people were just getting lost all over the place because it is a massive maze. But equally, that's why Jenny's very good with me, my guide dog, because she's always very good at helping me find the terrace cafe, because once a week she gets a free sausage from Betty behind the counter.
Well, that's called priorities, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, Torbay is an area that's very close to your heart. You've been quite open about expressing your passion for topics like better housing and improving outcomes for young people in the Torbay region. So can you share a moment when you felt real progress has been made on those fronts?
Well, I'd have to go back to when I was leader of the local authority for 4 years, and we had the joys of COVID, which kind of got in the way of the change that we wanted to do, but at least we were in post rather than others. And the change that we made to children's services, I'm adopted. I was brought up with my fellow adopted brother, but he's genetically different to me, but still my brother. And then 15 years ago, I found my birth family and discovered that I'd got in total 10 siblings. And my birth mother, I was adopted in Birmingham, and I discovered that, then moved down here when I was infant in arms. And then we discovered that my birth mother was living 6 miles away from me in Kingstainton, which was quite a shock. But I go down a potential rabbit hole there. But for change, and change for children in Torbay, was getting us from failing to good within 2 years. And that was making sure that we'd got the right chief executive, the right director of children's services, myself as somebody who felt I had skin in the game, as somebody who'd been adopted, a colleague called Cordelia Law in charge of children's services, driving the positive change, including children. So achieving that. And then on top of that, we then got most improved council of the year due to that, and getting a firm handle on our finances, because you can't deliver the goods, as the Labour Party are beginning to learn nationally, unless you've got that firm hand on the tiller of the finances, because otherwise the rest is just bloody hopeless.
But in terms of like personal experiences, you've been able to utilise that as a way of connecting and actually coming up with practical solutions.
Yeah, and it is also, some people have a sense of self-entitlement for themselves. The important thing for me when I was leader of the council, but also as MP now, is having a sense of entitlement for our looked after and cared for children or care experienced children, so that you can say to businesses or to partners, what are you doing for our care experienced or looked after kids, so that you have that sense of entitlement as if they were, because it's one of those things, if it were my child, what would I want for them? And that's what we need to be doing, is supporting them. Because the reality sadly is, if you're in the care system, you're more likely to spend time in prison than spend time studying at university. So they've got some real challenges for life chances. And quite often you find that the people who are sleeping rough on our streets may have had a traumatic experience as a child as part of their entering into the care system, because they might have been abused at home. Or normally it's sadly pure neglect that you look where the potential intergenerational neglect for children, which is very, very sad. But we need to break that cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And very well said. Earlier on, you mentioned about your guide dog. I believe the genetic eye condition that you've got, Stargardt's, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, and it's a form of macular degeneration, which is the most common form of eyesight loss for older people. Sadly, I've got a form of juvenile macular degeneration. It means that my world is a bit like looking through frosted glass. I've also got like a big hole, so if you annoy me, I can stare at you and you can vanish. But also, it means I can miss things, or I might hallucinate without the need for drugs to encourage that. So it means that I can be walking along the road and I'll think that there's a bar I'm just about to walk in front of, and actually it's a shadow from a post standing up. Or I'll think that I can see two pigeons on the floor, and then I'll look again and realise there's some legs attached and I'm seeing some feet. But it means I have difficulty reading things. Well, I just don't read. I tend to listen to everything. So WhatsApp is absolutely brilliant to be able to message with stuff. And it also means that in the House of Commons, which was probably the biggest challenge and continues to be a challenge, but I don't know how to manage it, is other MPs are able to just stand up and read notes or cue cards or whatever they like. I have to memorise my speeches. I've had some support from a gentleman called Ian Rose, who is a gold-winning Paralympian who does motivational speeches. So 3 sessions with him over last winter was really helpful. A lot of it is about confidence building, but also knowing some tricks about how to get it in your head. So that's part of that world. But also, I am able to get some additional support staff that I wouldn't necessarily have to help me get through the day, because the world is a bit more challenging for me. But also, it means that I've perhaps walked in those shoes.
It sounds as though you've utilised this as empowerment rather than something that's holding you back. I mean, you've mentioned about having to memorise your speeches. I imagine you also have to memorise lots of facts, figures and intel before you go into a debate or when you're working on a particular project, which I think it's fair to say not all the MPs are very good at remembering their facts and figures and intel. So you've almost turned it into, I guess, a bit of a superpower in a way.
There's an element of truth to that. It's a bit like, oh, you're registered blind. You must be able to have super hearing and things like that. Perhaps I'm just a little bit more attentive than the next person, and it jumps out at me a little bit more. So I would say that my disability means that I still get to the same outcome. I just might do it a bit differently. I go back to the gentleman who won Strictly Come Dancing, and he talked about people who face challenges in their lives like he did with learning to dance. And he was talking about what you need is opportunity, support and determination. And that is a really useful mantra for any challenge in life, that opportunity, support and determination of actually looking to change things. And I do meet people and they say, I've got a youngster who is partially sighted. And they say, look, Steve's in Parliament. There's his guide dog. His disability hasn't held him back. So therefore, you need to just believe in yourself and drive yourself forward. So it feels a great weight of expectation upon you. But also, I've had constituents come along to surgery saying, I would much sooner have an MP who has faced some challenges in their lives rather than being born with a silver spoon in their mouth, because they're more likely to walk alongside me and understand the challenges that I face in my life compared to somebody who had life easy for themselves.
The Devon Business Show is back. Devon Chamber is bringing the Southwest's largest business event back to Plymouth Life Centre on Wednesday, the 15th of October, connecting hundreds of businesses and entrepreneurs with future clients all under one roof. With over 125 exhibitors, interactive stands, live podcasts, a networking hub, and guests from across the city and the county, this is the not-to-be-missed date for your diaries. There are many ways to get involved, including a launch party on the 1st of July, where you can enjoy a cocktail and canapés at Tinside Lido overlooking the Sound. Plus, our pre-show networking breakfast at Home Park's Mayflower Grandstand on the day. A limited number of stands are available. Book yours now at devonchamber.co.uk. The Devon Business Show at Plymouth Life Centre on Wednesday the 15th of October. Let's get working at networking.
You've mentioned that a couple of times in this conversation, so I guess you're very much an advocate towards those that have entered politics with a genuine background. They've either run their own businesses, you know, any kind of anti-career politician, or you know what I mean? Somebody who's...
Well, is it carpetbaggers who just want to come along, take over a constituency and then drive there? And for me, I would only ever want to be the constituency MP for the town that I grew up in. I was brought up in a guest house on Lymington Road. You know, my temporary office was a stone's throw from my childhood house. So it is believing in the place that you know and love. And the fact that I've served it for 30 years as a councillor, I used to work previously for 18 years, so a bit of a long-term apprenticeship for the former Liberal Democrat MP Adrian Sanders from 97 to 2015. That gave me a good idea what made Torbay tick. And now in my mid-50s, I've become the Member of Parliament. it's now an opportunity for me to drive. And the perverse thing is, ironically enough, as leader of the council, you have a lot more levers of control to try and change things within your community because you have a budget and can manage things. But as an MP, unless you end up in the government or something, your sphere of influence is so much less powerful. But you're still able to convene things because people, oh, it's the MP. So that opportunity to convene things, champion things, and be the voice in Westminster is a real opportunity. But also me having my guide dog, Jenny, has been incredible. My first Prime Minister's question time, which is slightly bizarre, is getting wished happy birthday for your dog earlier on that week by the Prime Minister at the beginning of his response to me was slightly bizarre. But also then the opportunity of saying, well, he joined Jenny and I on a visit to Paignton Zoo to hear about the impact of the national insurance hikes on business in the West Country was the more serious angle to drive that. But Jenny more generally has helped put Torbay more on the map. In the first few weeks, it was almost embarrassing the amount of media interest, not just in the UK, but in France, Japan. She even appeared on the equivalent of John Craven's news round in Australia, mentioning Torbay. So I'd have to get the night sleeper up early on a Monday. Well, of course it's early, so the night sleeper, but have to get up there for the night sleeper because my Monday morning was jam-packed with interviews with people, you know, whether it's The Express or PA or other publications, all around Jenny goes to Westminster. I'm less under her shadow as I was at the beginning.
I tell you what, you be aware of Jenny, because at any minute now, she's going to be running for post.
She is, of course, leader of the opposition. She's up for Westminster Dog of the Year. But also this autumn, Jenny is appearing in her own book. There's a book called Political Animals with Larry the Cat as one chapter. And one of the chapters is on Jenny. So that's going to be good fun that that's coming out.
What a great angle for a book. That's genius. A few moments ago, you mentioned the topic of the various overheads that businesses have to face nowadays. Also, before we started recording, you mentioned that you've moved from one office into a new office. We forget that MPs' surgeries, your offices or your shops, you're basically running a small business, essentially, because you've got overheads. You have to cover the cost of that. And you're facing the challenges that all small businesses are facing as much as anyone else. So what do you see within Torbay and how you've brought the discussion to Parliament? What do you see as the biggest opportunities, but also the biggest challenges that businesses in your specific area are facing?
Well, when you look up where people are employed, 25% of our population are employed in health or social care, and a little under 17% are tourism hospitality. So Torbay Hospital is a significant employer, and I do worry there could be an agenda with the lack of investment over many years to strip the hospital of significant services, which would have a significant impact on well-paid jobs in our community. But equally, tourism is a really important part of our world. And when I was leader of the council and with the Conservatives currently running the council, we have the same vision around raising standards of tourism in Torbay, whilst it isn't a one-trick pony, improving what the offer is in Torbay is really important, because that's not only going to improve the offer for our visitors, but it's going to make people who have deeper pockets think, I want to live in Torbay because they've got an interesting offer in the area. Yeah, it's got nice beaches, it's Dartmoor, Plymouth, Exeter aren't that far away, and I value what there is in Torbay, but also our legacy of when we used to have Standard Telecom and Nortel. Electronics and photonics are really important, and I've been working with some of the leaders of that industry to see how we can get them heard a little bit more up in Westminster and seeing what show and tell opportunities there are. So there's numbers of things, but also it's like when the budget came out, I made it my business to reach out to like a dozen businesses from different sectors and just hear what their reflections were. But it is that national insurance hike has effectively chilled the economy. And that is the reverse of what I'm sure the Labour Party no needs to happen with the economy where there needs to be real growth. Also, the Chancellor has failed to leave enough headroom in her budget. We know this autumn she's going to be coming back for more, and it's where is that more going to be? So it's not a happy world that we're in by any means.
Yeah, challenging times. What about attracting, you mentioned photonics, but other new sectors to the Bay? Because there's a lot to offer.
Yeah, and I think it's getting vibrancy back into our town centres across the country. We have seen that significant change. You know, in the 80s, it was out of town. With more online world stuff, we just see so many empty shops. So that reshaping of the Torbay patch for me that I cover is Torquay and Paint, and Brixham is out of my world. But it's reimagining those town centres are absolutely essential, and we've got some plans for those. But it is looking for what strengths we've got and making sure we're building on those. And it is, rather than thinking, oh, let's reinvent the wheel, what can we be building on our strengths here in Torbay rather than coming up with something that is off the wall?
Mm-hmm. So when you're not fighting for all this, I've got a list of activities here that apparently you're very interested in also doing. They include kayaking, swimming with your dog, Jenny, joining you. You're very much a sea lover. So I guess the connection to the sea is very important for your well-being.
Yeah, I really love the sea. I think I got to about the age of 30 and I thought, well, actually, what's the point of living in Torbay without actually enjoying the sea? So I've taken up kayaking in vaguely recent years. Mm-hmm. That's got me around Land's End. I've been out kayaking in Shetland. I think the most extreme place I've been is St Kilda, which is about 50 odd miles west of the Outer Hebrides. Because I'm visually impaired, the ability to look after yourself on the water is really nice. My wife has profoundly worse eyesight than me, and she really enjoys kayaking. But there's a hell of a lot of faff involved in getting your boat ready, getting all the kit together, and then getting on the water and then doing it in reverse afterwards. So quite often for a quick salt water hit, getting in the sea and having a nice swim. And also it means that the dogs can come in with us. You know, my wife's got a guide dog called Pepsi, and they both enjoy swimming with us as well. So all being about in the water, and it's so nice in the summer now that we're in the proper summer, so you don't have that 30 seconds of desperately swimming around as you do earlier on in the year to try and get warm and then coming out like a ready bred kid. Now it is just delightful to get in the water and it's all good within about 3 seconds.
I tell you what, I've got to say, I admire you in so many ways for doing that, because you wouldn't get me kayaking. Puts a real chill down my spine. I don't like doing anything like that. Another thing that you've mentioned again before we were recording that you enjoy doing, which is something else that you would never get me doing, and that's canvassing, going from door to door, which I guess all the local MPs have to do. They have to connect with their communities. It's really important, but it's obviously important about getting votes up as well. So you've described that as being one of your ways of relaxing.
Actually, you don't get the grumpy people. You occasionally get grumpy people who are keen to slam the door on you. However, it's kind of helpful that Jenny's usually stuck her head in the door and is looking to see if they've got a cat or anything, because she's fascinated with cats. So that makes it harder for them to slam the door in your face. But it is an extremely unusual thing. Normally, people are really happy that you've come round and made time, particularly now that I'm the Member of Parliament. So people are really pleased and happy to see you, and you can then pick up matters and hear from people what their challenges are. Because at the end of the day, if you're not a people person as MP, you're in the wrong profession, unless you're in a very safe seat. I just can't believe the love that there is out there as a newly elected MP. You know, I'd be on local buses shortly after getting elected and people would queue up to shake me by the hand. I went to a Costa coffee shop earlier on this week, and there was a gentleman who was a representative of Costa Coffee, and he said, well, I've never seen that before, people coming up and shaking their hand to the MP and saying how delighted they are that you're their MP. And he used to work for a Labour MP elsewhere in the country. So most people are, even if they're supporting another party, happy that you've come and that they've had an opportunity to meet you, and you to hear from them is the most important thing.
I think that's a key point, because I genuinely don't think there should be animosity towards MPs of other parties. If you support one party, it doesn't mean you can't engage with your MP because they're a member of another party. And you get some people who are really quite, you know, I'm not going to talk to them because they, you know, they're a Tory. I'm not going to talk to them because they're Labour. They kind of literally put up this firewall between it. You know, when you actually have an MP and you have the opportunity to engage with your MP, that is a genuine opportunity. You shouldn't miss out on it. You can share something that they can take on and pilot and move something forward that you're passionate about.
And I think the crucial thing is that most MPs, the 98%, are there to support their local community. And that's what it's all about for them, of whatever political party they may be. So they are mostly in it for the right reasons, of course. I'm sure there's the odd sociopath out there, but never mind.
So we obviously know that Jenny is pretty much like a mascot, but something you're also well known for, I didn't know this, but Doc Martens. You're quite fond of your beloved Oxblood Doc Martens. How does that go down in Parliament?
I get ministers saying to me, oh, I'm sure many of the other Labour members would love your Oxblood Red Doc Martens. Because I'm visually impaired, I like bright things. It makes my life easier. So to a certain extent, having a bright pair of boots makes it easier for me to find them where the hell I threw them off the night before. So I tend to like bright things. However, I get told by my chief political advisor, which is my son, William, who's 22, not to wear so much garish things. So I have to sober my dress much more, but I still enjoy my Rome-bought bright orange tie, and he tells me off regularly for wearing it for photographs.
Oh, don't listen to him. Just make a stand, all right? Make a stand. Thank you very much for joining us, Steve Darling MP, on In Conversation With. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for your time. It's been great.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, helping with all your business and personal taxation needs. Westcott's, we're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios, full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.